They tell us they are doing it for our own good, that they are simply trying to help us, that we should allow them to do what we cannot do for ourselves. All these good intentions lead us to ask, can agriculture survive all our good intentions?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 628th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in St. Petersport who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello.
Producer Parmley's Taft. Say hello, Parm. Hello. And Carol Stafford is in there working on the phones. Folks, consider Michael Olson's second law of the food chain. The farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. Makes sense if you think about it. If you buy eggs from Farmer John at the farmer's market, you can look into John's eyes and pretty much see what's in the eggs. And if something does go wrong with those eggs, why, you know how to get your hands on Farmer John, right? But what if you're feeding your baby formula that comes all the way from China? Or yourself peanut butter from Georgia? And you discover there is melamine in the formula and peanut butter is full of salmonella. You can't do anything about it because the distance is so great. So who do you turn to when those foods from faraway places go bad? Well, of course, you turn to the government. The government is now considering a number of solutions to the problems presented by faraway foods. The centerpiece of this legislation appears to be the Food Safety Modernization Act of 2009, sponsored as House Bill 875 by Representative Rosa DeLauro, a Democrat from the state of Connecticut, and co-sponsored by 39 Democrat congresspersons. If passed, HB 875 will do the following. Consolidate all food-related activities of the federal government within a new agency called the Food Safety Administration, or FSA. Bind all state and county departments of agriculture to the authority of the new FSA, define all farms and ranches as food production facilities, and allow the FSA or its agents access to all food production facilities and their documents, force farmers who sell directly to consumers to make their customer list available to the FSA or its agents, and allow the FSA to hire industry leaders to decide how the food safety programs will be administered. Folks, it appears as though HB 875 will, for all intents and purposes, subjugate the entire food chain of the United States to the federal government in the name of food safety. But all these good intentions lead us to ask, can local agriculture survive HB 875? Should we place the safety of our food chain in the hands of the same people who supervised Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae? Will federalizing our agriculture provide a de facto subsidy to foreign agriculture and thus make us ever more dependent upon their foods for our survival? Here to help us dig around for an answer, we have, let's see, Tony. We'll start with Tony Corbo. Let's see if I can bring him up here. I can't make any. Well, we're having a little trouble with our computer here. If that won't work, maybe what I could do is... Tony, are you there?
I'm here, Michael.
Okay, good. We're having just a little bit of troubles.
Okay.
Here we got you. Tony, you're with the Food and Water Watch, right?
Correct.
And tell us a little bit about the Food and Water Watch.
Well, we're a public interest organization, nonprofit consumer organization. We work on food policy and also public water infrastructure issues. We were formed in November of 2005. We're a spinoff of Ralph Nader's group, Public Citizen.
Good. And your organization is favorably disposed to age 75, right?
Yes, we are.
Good. And finally, who pays your way?
Excuse me?
Who pays the way for your Food and Water Watch?
Well, we have we're developing a membership base, and we do get funding through various foundations. But our membership base is steadily growing because of the work that we're doing.
Fair enough. Also with us today, Pete Kennedy, an attorney and interim president for Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Pete, welcome to the Food Chain.
Morning, Michael.
So happy to have you aboard. We haven't worked with the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. I never thought there would be such a thing, but there is. Why is there?
Yes, there is. The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund has been founded to protect the rights of farmers to sell the products of the farm direct to consumers. To protect consumer access, to be able to purchase products from the farm directly, and to protect both farmers and consumers from government interference in those transactions.
Fair enough. And your organization is not so favorably disposed to HB 875, correct?
That is correct. We just think the impact it have will have a substantial impact on small farms and the local food movement, and not for the better as we see it.
Okay, good. So we have, and who pays your way, by the way? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund.
We get some donations, but it's mostly, I believe most of our way is paid just through membership fees from small farmers and consumers interested in accessing local food.
Okay, good. Well, folks, here we have essentially two organizations that are pretty much headed in the same direction but have different opinions with respect to HB 875. So we'll work our way through this bill and see if we can make any sense of it at all today. And I'd note that today President Obama was mentioning in his radio address that we need to do something to guarantee the safety of our food, because whatever we're doing now isn't working, so we have to do something. So away we go. First of all, when we look at HB 875, we notice one thing, and that is it seems to be a political thing, because there are, it's totally Democrat and no Republican. So I'd like to ask each of you, why is that? Tony?
Well, yeah, let me start off. H.R. 875
H.R.
is one of several food safety bills that have been introduced in the Congress to deal with the food safety program at FDA. And it's only the Food and Drug Administration. It does not impact the United States Department of Agriculture and none of the other food safety bills. For example, the FDA Globalization Act, which is was introduced by Congressman John Dingell from Michigan, which is H.R. 759, or Congressman Jim Costa's bill from California, H.R. 1332. They're all dealing with the problems that FDA has in regulating food safety. And FDA regulates about 80% of our food supply.
Let me ask you this. This bill then would not subjugate all other government food safety endeavors into one place. Then.
That is correct. That is correct. And there's been some confusion about that. And so you have in the past 3 or 4 years, you know, there's been a litany of food recalls, all leading back to the problems that the Food and Drug Administration has in regulating food supply, regulating the food safety in this country, whether it be from domestic sources or from imports. And you know, you cited some good examples in the intro, Michael. You know, you had the melamine in infant formula, although that never made it to our country. But the
it did, as I understand.
The melamine made it into the baby milk powder formula that was then manufactured into cookies and other things. That did come to this country. And so we have problems with imports. Last year we had the problem with the first they thought it was, you know, tomatoes that were contaminated with salmonella. Then they found out that it was imported jalapeno peppers from Mexico. Right.
Wait a minute. We have to take a quick break, Tony. But when we come back, I'd like to ask you, aren't all of these problems that we have problems from faraway food? Folks, this is The Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Today we're talking about the possibility of reorganizing the federal government to tackle the food safety issue and what implications that has for the safety of our food and the availability of our food and the security of our food chain. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Join us. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, there's a lot going on out there in our foods. Foods coming in with melamine from China, from salmonella from our peanut butter from Georgia, E. coli on our spinach from California. What are we going to do to protect ourselves from these foods that come from so far away? Were they coming from our next-door neighbor, the farmer at the farmer's market? Why, we could go get our hands on the guy and do something about it. But they come from far away, and the farmers who grew them are so far from us that we have no idea who they are. So how are we to protect ourselves? Well, of course, we turn to the government for help and ask them what to do. And so that's what we're doing today. We're talking about how we can turn to the government for help and go from there. Let's see. We got Tony Corba with us from Food and Water Watch, and also Pete Kennedy from the Farmer to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Tony, I asked you a question before we left for the break. Isn't the big problem here foods from far away?
Well, a lot of it is foods from far away, and that's one of the problems that FDA has had problems in terms of getting its arms around. How to regulate foods that are in interstate commerce and imported food. Mm-hmm. We're importing more of our food. It's you know, right now we're consuming about 15% of all the food that we eat in this country is imported. It's as high as over 80% of the seafood that we're eating in this country is imported, and FDA has no capability of inspecting the safety of that food. It rarely sends inspectors abroad to see where the food is how it's being manufactured, yeah. And it at the ports of entry, it's doing about 1% inspection there.
So we have no handle at all.
That's right.
So, but with respect to why does this law seems to have an equal impact on local agriculture as well?
Only deals with number one, food establishments that actually manufacture food that goes into interstate commerce. So, and then it also requires food production facilities, and farms are defined as a food production
right.
facility that also put products into interstate commerce. It does not outlaw farmers markets.
Well, it does not outlaw
home, you know, backyard gardening. I'm an avid gardener. I tore up half of my backyard 3 years ago to have a garden. If you think I would support legislation like that, then, you know, you're crazy.
Okay, let's talk with Pete Kennedy. Pete, what's wrong with that?
The trouble with this is they're obviously the industrial food system is obviously in need of effective regulation.
Okay, that's something I think we can all agree on.
Right,
you
absolutely.
Know, because of the distance involved in these foods, we can't rely on ourselves to control what's in our foods. So we have to rely on somebody else, and if not the government, who?
Right, and what you have with the local food movement has actually been part of the solution. It's not part of the problem. And in our view, this regulation is adopting a one-size-fits-all regulation regulatory scheme with regard to the local food movement and the industrial food system.
Well, Tony says it's not going to have any impact on local agriculture. He says that it's not going to outlaw farmers' markets, not going to do any of that stuff. So what's wrong with it?
Okay, there are some requirements that, at least in my view, apply both to producers who only market in interstate commerce and producers who who market in interstate commerce.
So it's the one-size-fits-all thing that you're talking about. What are some of those provisions?
Okay, for instance, under the bill, FSA is charged with establishing a national traceability system that requires farmers to keep records that enable FSA to track the history, use, and location of an item of food. That would what that essentially means is that farmers selling direct to consumers have to make their customer lists available to federal inspectors, and you referenced that at the beginning of the program.
So all farms are going to be defined as food production facilities, whether it's the farmer next door who sells you a dozen eggs, or to the, you know, the person manufacturing peanut butter in Georgia. So everybody is a food production facility, right?
Right, and with the exception of the registration requirement, all farms are also looked on as food establishments under the bill as well. So you take someone who makes Farmstead cheese and say Tony is correct, and I'm not sure he is, that this only applies to interstate commerce. Say someone who manufactures Farmstead cheese happens to live near a state line, sells maybe locally at a farmer's market across the state line, they would be subject to weekly unannounced inspections by FSA.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, just any farm, by my reading of the bill, whether they market in interstate commerce or strictly intrastate, has to have a written food safety plan that describes likely hazards and preventative controls implemented to address those hazards. Another word for that is, it sounds like to me, is a HACCP plan. And just this requirement is being imposed on small farms where it's really HACCP plans were defined for industry, just businesses engaging in commerce on a much greater scale than our members do.
Okay, let's go quickly to the phones and talk with Lowell, who has a comment about the subject. Lowell, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks
Very
for the
good.
Call.
This is a little far afield, but allow me to, and I won't go very long. As you know, I'm an organic farmer and very, very interested in what happens here. But in another industry, to show you what happens with one size fits all, right now there are every motorcycle dealer across the United States is not allowed to sell his motorcycles that might be operated by a child 12 years or younger because of the same rule that prevents lead paint that might be on a doll that a kid might bite the head off of or chew off and get the lead. They are not allowing these motorcycles to be sold because there might be some lead in the paint on those motorcycles. One size fits all does not. It's extremely problematic.
Let me ask you something, Lowell. You grow food. Do you need the government to supervise your food, to watch over you? You sell foods locally. You sell them at the farmer's market. If you sell bad food, you know what's going to happen to you, right?
Absolutely, I do. And my customers would tell me immediately if there was any problem, and we would make it right if there was any problem. I don't think we need government down this far. The problem is, locally, we can take care of our own business. We do not need oversight from two or three levels of bureaucratic business.
Okay, when we get back, I'm going to ask the big question. Why do we need to supervise small local agriculture at all? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Pete Kennedy and Tony Corbo about HB 875 and related legislation that seeks to put all of the food safety issues under the umbrella of a new agency called the Food Safety Administration. I guess it would be Big Brother watching out for us to protect us from food that comes from far away. But what happens with for food that comes from our neighbors? Do we still need that same kind of protection? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. E. coli in the spinach, salmonella in the peanut butter, melamine in the baby formula. It gets scary out there when you think of all of the food contaminations that we have to put up with, and most of those problems seem to come from foods from far, far away. And as we industrialize our agriculture and concentrate ourselves in the city, the foods that we eat come from farther and farther away, and so we lose control over what's in those foods, and we have to rely on somebody to watch out for us. We used to watch out or rely on the farmer because we could see him or her and see what essentially is they're doing and what's in their food, but we no longer have that ability anymore, so what do we do? And that's what we're asking today. We're asking Tony Corbo from the Food and Water Watch and Pete Kennedy from the Farmer to Consumer Legal Defense Fund. When we left off, I was asking, gosh, do we really need to have any rules and regulations to govern local agriculture? Because it seems to me that local agriculture governs itself. Tony Corbo?
Well, you know, the thing is that local agriculture also has to comply with various environmental regulations. You know, you can't spray contaminated water on your crops and expect that to be safe. Mm-hmm. So there are regulations.
You know, if you were a local farmer and you're spraying contaminated water on your crops and taking that crops into the farmer's market and your customers are getting sick, you're not going to be in business for very long if you're in this world at all for very long.
That's right. But the thing is that some of the things that the farmers have to do are common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so what this particular legislation asks and Mr. Kennedy, I think you're reading into it a little, you know, more than it's there in the legislation. It doesn't call for a full HACCP plan, but it does call for a food safety program that a farmer would have to write.
So you think
and
we need to? You think we need to have local farmers as part of that?
Yeah, I think it's a good idea to have a plan in effect. And as a matter of fact, you know, all of the pieces of legislation that have been introduced have called for that for fresh produce.
I know.
It's not
It's
not just HR 875. It's HR 759. It's S 510. I mean, they're all calling for that.
Well, Tony, nobody expects the government to not recommend that the government take charge of something when it gets right down to it. And when I lay this issue on the table of having no rules and regulations for local agriculture, it's probably, when it gets right down to it, the most radical concept on the face of the earth. Pete, do you agree with that?
Well, I can tell you what the trend is at the state level. I believe the trend is moving away from regulation of these local food processors. There's actually a bill in Wyoming right now that would exempt food farmers who sell the products of the farm direct to consumers from any licensing or inspection requirements.
Hmm.
So I think that this is a problem with the industrial food system. The local food system is thriving, and this bill has the potential to burden the producers, local food producers, with enough compliance requirements where it could threaten the health of the local food movement.
Okay, let's go to Mary. Mary, welcome to the food chain. Thank you for your call today.
Hi, Michael and guests. Can you hear me?
Gotcha.
Okay, good. You know, this occurs to me that this is government once again building another bureaucracy that isn't needed.
Don't you think it's somebody has to watch over food?
I think they need to watch over some of our food system, but it isn't with our local farmers or even really with U.S. farmers. It's from abroad. And if our government wants to really help us and protect us, then they should do the hard stuff, not the easy stuff. Listen, you know, all of this is going on in the manufacturing level. It's not happening on our farms. Go clean up the peanut farm industrial mechanization plants. You know, we've got a couple of those kinds of issues in the United States. Most of this is coming from abroad, and our government, as usual, is taking the easy way out. Listen, you don't want to, as a bureaucrat, go into another country and do all that travel. Go to a bucolic farm and take the easy job and take the taxpayer's dollar and really don't do anything for us. I'm sick of it. I'll take my answer off the air.
No, I mean, Mary brings up a very good point in terms of the issue with the imports and this particular bill is the only bill that says that any imported food has to meet the same food safety requirements as those here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that is not being followed at all, and so the thing is that yes, we need to regulate the imports. We need to regulate the industrialized agriculture system in this country because that's where the problems.
I think we all agree on that. Somebody has to watch over that industrial.
Right, and so the FDA has not had the authority to police the food manufacturing systems in this country adequately or those abroad, and they haven't had the resources. And this bill provides those resources. Some of the other bills will require people to pay a fee to the FDA to do the inspection.
Mm.
This bill would not require that to occur.
Okay, let's go quickly to Bob, who is an organic farmer. Bob, welcome to the food chain.
Oh, thank you. And I'm also a contributor to the Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, you're welcome. I just want to say something about how fragile small family farms are. A lot of us are in an economic position where we could make more money by renting out the fields to a large corporation to farm specialty crops or to a developer to put up particle board palaces.
Particle board palaces.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's good.
And also a lot are approaching retirement age. And the reason that we stay doing this, even though it doesn't make sense financially in a lot of cases, is the quality of life issue. Being in control of your production, having a product that you're proud of, and you can directly meet.
Bob, do you think the government? Do you think we need to have the government superintending you?
Absolutely not. And the fact of the matter is if we have to give up our constitutional Fourth Amendment right to have people come in without a court order or without any prior reason to come in, but just on the general basis of inspection, to come up and disrupt our lives, that goes.
Bob, what happens if you sell food that's
quality of life?
Bob, what happens to you if you sell food that's bad to your customers?
It hasn't happened. We're always on the lookout for it.
Sure, but what happens if you did? Your customers would come right back to you, and you'd know about
it. Absolutely. Yeah? And if it was gross negligence on our part, they'd have basis for a lawsuit. Mm-hmm. If it was, I don't know, just in the natural.
Well, hang in there, Bob. We're going to have to take a quick break.
Okay.
Thank you so much
all
for
right.
the call. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking food safety. Does the government need to step in and protect us from foods that come from far away? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Well, here's a question to bounce around that beautiful mind of yours when you have some spare time to bounce things around. Question: should we place the safety of our food chain in the hands of the same people who supervised Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae? What do you think? Folks, this is the Food Chain. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour. We're talking about the attempt to put some legislation on the table in Washington, D.C. that will change the way we supervise our food here in the United States. It's kind of putting the government in charge of the entire food chain when it gets right down to it. And so we look at this situation and wonder what will happen if that does indeed come to pass. We're going to go back to Bob really quickly, who has a very interesting follow-up. Bob, welcome back.
Thank you. The question was a hard one, is what happens if the product that we produce and that we're so proud of makes somebody ill?
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons that's very unlikely is because we eat our products ourselves. We're the first tester of it. And, Frank, I don't know where else in the food chain that you have a better system than that.
Yeah.
Thank you for...
You're the canary in your own mind, aren't you?
Pardon?
You're the canary in your own mind.
Canary, yeah, yes, indeed.
Okay, go ahead. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Right. I'd like to say something about the way the act works, too. Say you are a farmer engaging only in interstate commerce, and an inspector comes to your federal inspector comes to your door and...
Wait a minute. You said intrastate. That means within a state, right?
Right, that's right.
Okay.
Say the inspector comes to your door, you refuse to let the inspector conduct an inspection. They bring charges against you under the act for refusing an inspection. You have the burden of showing that you are not in interstate commerce.
Interstate.
The farmer has the burden of showing that he is not in interstate commerce. What does that mean? Does that mean you have to trace every sale that's gone out to door to make sure the food did not cross state lines? So that's a huge change from the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act.
How on earth would you prove that? You know, if you sell a chunk of cheese to somebody and they, you know, put it in their lunch box and they end up in, you know, 13 states away and they eat something bad and get sick and then there's your cheese.
Right, and that's a big difference between the Food, Drug, Cosmetic Act and this act. The Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act specifically talks about conducting inspections of those engaged in interstate commerce. This act does not. It talks about traceability requirements for people that are engaged in commerce, not interstate commerce. If you look at the penalty section of the act, It mentions the term interstate commerce in connection with adulterated and misbranded foods. It does not mention it in connection with refusing an inspector who wants to inspect your property or refusing to turn over records to an inspector. The way that reads, it is would apply to those engaged in intrastate commerce as well.
Tony?
Well, I've spoken to the author, and the author says that...
Who is the author of this anyway?
It's Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro.
Now, she's a congressperson from Connecticut.
Correct.
Where did she get the know-how on how to completely revamp the food safety of the United States food chain?
Well, I mean, she's gotten input from different sources, including a lot of the consumer groups here in Washington.
Okay.
We've given her ideas because we're very concerned that the FDA is a broken agency. It cannot deal with food safety properly, and so she's gotten ideas from us, and formulated this legislation. But this legislation, and I would hope that the folks who've been critical about this one section of the bill would work with us to improve it. So that it winds up being clear that it only would impact those facilities that are engaged in interstate commerce, because the rest of the bill is extremely strong in terms of strengthening FDA's ability to regulate food safety. I mean, it is, and it has not been endorsed by any major industry group. I've seen stuff on the internet claiming that this was a big plot by Monsanto and others to take over the food supply. No industry group has endorsed this bill. They've endorsed other bills that have been introduced in Congress to deal with food safety at FDA, but this bill has not received any industry support.
Rich, let's go to the phone and talk with Rich. Rich, welcome to the food chain. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is nothing but incremental control like they're doing with the housing industry, the financial industry. Do we trust our government with any of these agencies? They're not even, the congressmen don't even read the bills that they get passed. They're passed overnight in a 24-hour period and nobody knows what's in them. What agency in the government do you trust? We got politicians that don't pay taxes. The IRS is even doing their job and they're probably one of the best. So I don't trust them to handle anything with my food. No more control because they get rid of the small farmers. They have only the big ones to handle, and the big ones are easier to control. And then they control our food, and that's what we need to live, that and water.
Thank you very much for your call, Rich.
Yeah, Michael, could I make a comment?
Yeah, we're going to have to do it right after we get back from the breaks. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're talking food safety with Pete Kennedy, Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, Tony Corbo, Food and Water Watch, and you, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Do stay tuned. You know, it seems like whenever we pass legislation to make this the most beautiful place in the world in which to live, we somehow end up subsidizing offshore production of our foods and fibers and manufactured goods. And we make it harder and harder and harder for people to produce things here in the United States. And we become increasingly reliant on foreign lands. And so we wonder, we look at the effort to make a food chain that's perfectly safe, to make those who sell food from one state to the other perfectly safe, and we wonder what impact this will have on our ability to do business in this country in the future. And that's the question of the day, is how are we going to survive our good intentions to make for a perfectly safe food chain? Pete, did you want to do a quick follow-up?
Yes. I mean, the caller just talked about the mistrust of towards the government agencies and acting in the best interests of the people. I can give you an example in regards to our members. Many of our members produce raw milk. We have a lot of our consumer members who want the access to raw milk. Last year, a congressional aide I've worked with, this is when all these E. coli, we were having the problems with the spinach, other food problems, other foodborne illness outbreaks were going on. congressional aid was told by a congressional liaison from FDA that raw milk was a high priority with the agency.
Mm-hmm.
I can address specific parts in this bill, too. There's a...
Well, that's kind of another show, but what you're saying...
What I'm saying is that the agency is going to ignore consumer demand for a product like raw milk. Under the bill, they have the power to...
To make those kinds of decisions?
Well, they have the power to, I believe, under the bill, to ban raw milk in interstate commerce.
Okay, fair enough. Hold on. We're going to take a quick one from Rory here. Rory, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. What is the number on this bill? Is it a House bill or a Senate bill?
There are several bills. The one that we're discussing mostly today is H.R. 875.
It's H.R.? I've seen it quoted as H.B.
Yeah, well, that's also incorrect. It's H.R., House Resolution 875. And then there's another bill that is similar, although the funding mechanism is different. That's H.R. 759. That's been introduced by Congressman John Dingell from Michigan.
Another expert,
And how is it?
Michael, if I could say.
Go right ahead.
I'm involved in the ag science.
Oops, lost Rory. Sorry we lost you, Rory. Folks, this has been Food Chain, a wild and crazy hour with Pete Kennedy from the from the Farmer to Consumer Legal Defense Fund, with Tony Corbo from the Food and Water Watch. And I think both organizations, when it gets right down to it, are organizations that support local agriculture to the best of their ability. But one says that we can do it by having the federal government get involved, and the other one's saying essentially that, not so sure about that federal government getting involved. Perhaps we shouldn't. So what do you think? We'd love to hear what you have to say. You can log on your comments on the forums at metrofarm.com. We'd love to hear you. And in the meantime, stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.